Good morning. Today is Monday, the 17th of April. Joining us this morning from the Humboldt County Office of Education. Are you a doctor?
Some people would call me a doctor. I have my doctorate, yes, but I'm not a medical doctor.
No, did you? Yeah, and you didn't stay at a Holiday Inn. I got it. Kobe Smart. Good morning, dude.
Good morning, Brian.
That would be, gosh, that would seem like it would be a comedy, like a sitcom. In an educational setting, everybody call each other doctor.
I'm sure it's been done.
Yeah, probably more of a Monty Python kind of a thing, a skit right. Rather than an ongoing, morning, doctor. all right, well, this one is kind of halfway in your neighborhood. Not in education. Why do we use the term narrow-minded?
Why do we use that? Well, it's to reference people who perhaps make decisions based on their own proximity to information. How's that?
That sounds like middle age or old English to me, but that's all right. We'll go with it.
Well, you know, people typically rely on the information that they have, and oftentimes none of us have all the answers. And so when people make decisions, they're not always making the decisions with the complete picture.
I was thinking like narrow lane.
Oh, okay. Mm. Is it bowling reference or something?
No, more like European cities.
Oh, okay.
Though he never held the title, Ben Jonson is widely considered to have been England's first poet laureate. After producing a smash hit in 1598, he became the chief literary lion of his era. In his last great work, The Staple of the News, was finished by 1625. By then, anything he wrote was sure to be widely read and quoted. So when he used a vivid title for a prejudiced person, it became quite popular in language. Writing of a man whose thoughts be... Oh boy, this is Middle Age English. Thoughts be dwell all in a lane, Jonson described him as being narrow-minded. Launched in this fashion, the expression was quickly adopted by sophisticates of the era. Many used Johnson's term jokingly at first, but it proved to be so expressive that we still use it in turn when we wish to label someone as having a restricted outlook or being provincial.
Now, Brian, I think that's exactly what I just said.
Yeah, you just used more syllables than what I did. Fewer words, but many more syllables. Oh, boy. Well, I suppose that's part of the challenge in education, too, is understanding what people are saying when they're saying. As you're looking at where things are today and some of those edicts coming down from the state, mm-hmm. is there a lot of opportunity for misinterpretation?
Yeah, absolutely. There is. And again, it goes back to that term narrow-minded. Oftentimes, especially now, you know, we operate in a very polarized world, and so people come to things like education or a lot of aspects of their life with a preconceived notion as to what things should be or how they should be or what they mean. And if we approach life and education like that, of course there's going to be misinterpretation of things.
Isn't it interesting, when you said preconceived notions of what education is supposed to be, and yet we can't get people to run for school boards. Mm-hmm. Isn't that kind of like a grand dichotomy?
Yeah.
I know what you're supposed to do, but I don't want to take the time to really spend any of my time telling it and showing you how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The school board is such an important role, especially in rural California. You know, the school... in most of our communities here in Humboldt County, but in rural California in general, they really are the only civic entity within these small communities. You think about Maple Creek, you think about, Greenpoint. There's no post office necessarily. There's no mayor, that sort of thing, these unincorporated areas. And so it's a really, really important responsibility. It's where the civic life of a community resides.
I guess the neighborhood school, that concept is still out there.
Yeah.
So when folks do start getting involved with or doing some research or trying to better understand what the current situation is with education. Mm-hmm. How do they start without bringing a lot of that, those preconceived notions in? Oh, well, it was this way when I was growing up. Oh, they should be doing this. Oh, what do you mean it's illegal and you can't do that? Mm-hmm. Or we hear some of the goofy stuff that's going on nationally and going, is it happening here? And then it, when it is, they're stunned and amazed and very frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll say the best way to counteract that is to make sure that we're making sure that the people who are impacted by decisions that are made, and those people who have the opportunity to make those decisions, they represent a cross-section of the community at large. The more we have the different voices and the different lenses in any room, the better the outcome, or I should say the more representative the outcome.
Yeah, not necessarily the better.
Right.
But at least everybody has, yeah, a buy-in on it.
Yeah, and we're operating from a, again, not a narrow-minded, but a wide field of information and perceptions. And when we do that, I think one of the positive outcomes is when people get together, especially if they're from different parts of the community, we realize that we have more in common than not.
So when curriculum decisions are being made, mm-hmm. Subject matter decisions are being made by a school, does the community, do we tend to weigh in? Do we tend to even be there? Know that it's happening? Let opinions be known?
Well, as representatives, and this is going back to your school board, question, one of the great responsibilities of school boards is to officially adopt curriculum for a school district or a charter school. And that's a requirement in California. And so theoretically, the school board members, they're there to represent the interests of those who elected them. So on a very small case, it is. But is the average person actively involved? Probably not. There's actually a lot of interesting curriculum things happening in the state of California right now. Everything from what they call model curriculum projects to mathematics.
We'll pick it up when we come back. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Colby Smart from the Humboldt County Office of Ed. What's your real title?
I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Educational Services.
Not of education.
Educational Services.
What's the service part?
Well, okay, that's a great question. So Ed Services is a division inside the Humboldt County Office of Education where a lot of the educational programming and also support services like foster homeless youth, our court and community schools. There are departments that reside underneath that umbrella. So we've got curriculum and instruction.
So curriculum and a little bit more.
And, well, yeah, a little bit more. Well, quite a bit more.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well.
Yes.
For this morning's topic.
We'll call it curriculum plus.
There you go. All right. So with what is being taught and how it's being taught, I would think that there's a lot of pressures from various special interest groups. To slant information in a certain way, either for a positive light or a negative light, instead of just turning on the lights. So as you're going through and making the recommendations for the various school boards about certain subjects and how they're presented, is that part of the review, part of the recommendation, part of what the filtering that that you look at things through, Colby, to kind of get a sense that, okay, this is presenting the information. This isn't coming from any other point of view.
Special interest group. Yeah. That sort of thing. Yeah. And so HCOE, one of the things that we have at our Franklin campus is something known as the Learning Resource Display Center. And it's a collection of all state-adopted curriculum in the state of California. And that's a resource that's open to community members. So if anybody might be interested in what's the math adoptions look like, and when I say adoptions, it is plural. School districts don't have to choose just one publisher. There's many different publishers that are quote-unquote state-adopted. They pass the test of meeting the standards. And so...
And those standards are established...
By the state, and through academics, through California Department of Education, through teams of teachers all over the state. It's cyclical. And the next big adoption that we have is the mathematics adoption in 2024.
Now, I would think math is pretty straightforward.
Well, yeah.
But I also suffered through cardinal numerals and subsets and universal sets in sixth and seventh grade. So I know that there's always a potential to take a hard left-hand turn and end up in the weeds in a nanosecond.
Yeah.
Are you able to not ferret that out, but make decisions predicated on maybe the more traditional definitions of some of the subject matter, English? Yeah. You know, I don't know the last time anybody talked about gerunds. Mm-hmm. In an English classroom, mm-hmm. anywhere in the state of California, because mm-hmm. I know grammar isn't even being taught anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's actually a really timely topic. In fact, one of our focuses at HCOE and in Humboldt County in general is on literacy. And, you know, you brought up the fact, do people bring their own, you know...
Biases, that works.
Their own biases on things. Reading, surprisingly, is there's a lot of division on the development and the application of reading instruction. And so...
What you read or no, teaching how?
How you teach children how to read. And so for the past number of years, Humboldt County has had an increased focus on something called the science of reading as opposed to whole reading instruction. And I'm not going to get into the weeds of it, but basically it's a return to... some people might call it more traditional reading instruction.
So you focus
on phonemic awareness, you focus on phonics, fluency, those sorts of things, as opposed to whole reading instruction, which has a more heavy focus on context, right? So, simple example. If I have a picture book, okay, and I have the word fox, and then I have a picture of a fox, right? What does that actually do to actually help a child read? Kid's going to see a fox. They're going to say, well, that says fox, right? So the focus on the science of reading is really helping kids learn how to decode and develop an awareness of what the letters are, how they sound, that sort of thing.
Transfer things to visuals. Visual imagery.
Yeah, as opposed
to... As they're reading.
Yeah.
Now, I know Dick and Jane disappeared a long time ago, right?
Where did they go?
Yeah, they went up the hill to get the pail of water and went over the other side of it.
With Humpty Dumpty, maybe?
Yeah. Well, and Dr. Seuss is now being, some of the real basic stuff that a lot of us learned with and taught our kids with and mm-hmm. grandkids with.
Sure.
Aren't around anymore. Do they have the flashcards? I remember... It was a series of boxes. I don't know how many she had in first grade, and you had to pass, and I don't even remember what the test was. I just remember a series of boxes that Mrs. Williams at Worthington had, and there were, I think, maybe 64 of them. And you had to go all the way through that, and then you got to do something. I don't know what it was. I mean, is it that simplistic now, or has that time come and gone?
No, not necessarily. It's maybe packaged a little bit differently, but that goes to an assessment, and kids are assessed. They're called benchmark assessments on, their fluency or their comprehension of reading or any other subject matter. So are there flashcards in existence? I'm sure that there are. But They do come in different packages.
Right.
But
and
essentially the concept is the same.
And Benchmarks for us was a penalty issue. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Colby Smart from Humboldt County Office of Ed. Colby, looking at some of the different challenges with curriculum, with the, I guess, with the computerization and the technology associated with so many things that are out there. Yeah, it's tough, I think, for a lot of us not to see that technology really, truly is a two-edged sword. There's an awful lot of pluses with it, but holy Toledo, there's an awful lot of negatives with it too. Mm-hmm. As you are winding through looking at curriculum options and what's possible and what isn't, whether it's virtual reality or you know, text in a printed book format, how do you make the call? Mm-hmm. What is, what isn't, what the method of delivery is for the information, the balances associated with it. And I know some of that is supposed to fall on the teachers, and some of it's supposed to fall on the parents, and some of it on the kids. But how do you wade through that whole swamp to figure out at least what two or three choices could be recommended in the subject matter that's being focused on?
Yeah. So I'll take the technology piece first, because kids, adults, what we've become really, really good at, and I don't think this is new, I just think it's increased, is we're really good at consuming with technology. You know, watching YouTube, streaming Netflix, that sort of thing. So when we talk about technology in education, there's one simple thing that I look for in the application of technology. Are you using the technology to consume information, which can be good? But more importantly, is the technology used to create or construct meaning out of that information? So, for example, I can go onto YouTube and watch how to build a robot with Legos, right? That's consuming that information. It's a passive activity, as opposed to using Legos and Lego robotics to actually build something in real life. So when it comes to the application of technology, that's the biggest differentiator for me. And when I recommend a use of technology, that's what's sort of driving my that recommendation.
So it's the engagement in whatever that is being presented, rather. So a passive nature, it's like looking through a magazine.
Right. I'll give you an example. One thing that we're doing right now, because career technical education, CTE, we all know how important that is. One of the ways that we're using technology is in order to get kids interested in the idea of auto mechanics or cooking or even health, is we've purchased a set of virtual reality glasses.
The goggles?
Yeah, the goggles. They're called Oculus. And inside those, it gives an opportunity, an immersive environment of kids actually actively learning how to change the oil in a car, for example.
So if you screw up in that, do you get a face full of oil?
There isn't.
A virtual splat? I mean, how do you know you messed up? Because real life, obviously, you you see, you touch, you feel, you have to clean it up.
You visually see these things. So if you drop a wrench, you're going to drop the wrench and you're going to hear the sound. You know, it's quite an immersive experience. And so, of course, that's not where it stops, right? We don't want kids to just learn how to do it via these goggles. But it piques the students' interest, getting them
so hopefully it's a motivational tool.
Yeah, motivational and also informational. One of the things up here is we don't have a lot of resources in terms of building state-of-the-art CTE facilities because of our size. Well, one way to supplement that lack of resources is to get students interested in these virtual environments. And then, as they move into high school, they're going to be better equipped to make decisions about, well, what kind of career am I interested in? Because they
so
have.
How long does that take? I'm thinking, if I sat down with a teacher, pretty much after a little, you know, maybe half an hour or so, you get a sense of whether or not this is something of interest or this is a class that I want. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with a virtual reality, I could see either taking really long or really short.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting the hands-on experience. And I still think most people learn from their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's battle scars, and that's getting out there and screwing it up and having to undo it and do it again. With virtual reality, you hit the button, you power off, you power back up, and you start all over again.
Right.
It's a little
like
less personal.
Yeah.
So how do you balance those two aspects?
Well, by ideally, by creating a pipeline from the introduction to the actual utilization of real-world tools. The point of virtual reality, I think most fundamentally, is to increase students' level of awareness and engagement. I was just up at the Cal Poly Humboldt Library, who they are doing some amazing things. They have a flight simulator up there. They even have a table. I don't know what the table's called, but I'll call it a cadaver table, where there is a virtual cadaver. And you can actually go and look at every part, all the systems of the human body, and before you actually go in and cut and dissect, whether it's a cadaver or a dog or a frog, you can get practice, right? That opens up that opportunity for engagement for many, many more people.
You
should go up there. It's quite interesting.
Well, I was wondering, with virtual reality, do they also have available parking space?
So you don't need parking spaces with virtual reality.
Well, you do if you get there and look at it. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Colby Smart from the Humboldt County Office of Ed. So, Colby, with the technology and with some of the different vocational potential areas of learning that are out there, how do you determine what the next one is? Because if you don't have to build a edifice and bring in all kinds of gear to make that happen, I would think that some of these areas that in the past were just economically not possible suddenly become possible and affordable. So how do you determine what the next area is going to be?
Well, I think the most important thing, Brian, I love that question, is we need to be really aligned with where our community is. You know, when we think about new industries coming in, like the wind farm, Nordic Aqua Farms, and other things, the data cables that are coming from Asia, those are going to demand very specific skill sets. And so, as much as possible, having a understanding of where the economy is going in our community, but also where the needs are, the current needs. And so, I'll give you an example. Post-COVID, we saw a dramatic rise in mental health supports and needs for students. Well, what we know is that our community is not equipped with the workforce to truly meet that need. And so recognizing that need and in partnership with many people, among them are the Vector Society, we last year started a mental and behavioral health career pathway in four local high schools. And so what that's meant to do is to give high school students an opportunity to learn about all the career fields associated with behavioral mental health. The idea being is, again, piquing their interest, giving them some practical skills. So even if they leave the high school environment and decide, well, I don't want to go to college, they at least have an awareness of where the entry points are for that career, right? So community need, and then also economy and where it's going.
Everybody says it's tough to project the future. Mm-hmm. So how do you project the future?
I don't know. That's what I came here to talk to you about.
Yeah, right.
Well, fortunately, at least in Humboldt, I mean, there's no way to predict, you know, predict with 100% precision what 20 years from now will look like. But we have some very nice signposts in our community right now to know that there is a transition in our economy. It's moving towards the wind farm. Industries like Nordic Aqua Farms. I mean, Google even has a data center up here in Humboldt County now. And so we know sort of on a macro level where the trends are going.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Fishing is the future. Fishing was the past, but fishing isn't really the current.
Except if you spell it
transitioning.
With a PH.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I suppose cybersecurity is, I mean, it's not just Humboldt County. Mm-hmm. But it certainly seems like we are in that tub with everybody else also.
Yeah. You know, I was listening to a talk recently that there's a projected, by 2045, there's a projected 17,000 additional jobs that are coming to our community that are directly or indirectly related to the wind farm. Now, you think about the impact on things like construction needs, healthcare, education. There, every sector of our economy is going to be impacted by this transition. The question is, how are we preparing? We need to prepare so our families and students aren't necessarily displaced by people, because the workforce is not ready, by people coming from other parts of California and the world to fill those jobs.
So, well, it would be interesting. I mean, if it's a new job, it's not displacing somebody. Now, it may limit somebody being able to move into there that's here already. It's an interesting discussion.
It is, unless you consider that a lot of the living wage jobs that used to really form the bedrock of our economy aren't there anymore. So yeah,
but the new people coming in are going to be part of the community.
They will be part of the community. So, I'm not saying keep people out. What I'm saying is we have a special obligation and responsibility to make sure our young people, should they decide to stay in Humboldt County, have a positive career trajectory, whether or not they decide to go to college.
Right. But can you train them for jobs that aren't here yet that they can't be employed for yet?
Well,
timing.
Well, yes. Yes, and that's what public education is all about. The moment we have a transitional kindergartner enter into the schools, those are 4-year-olds, right? Enter the nursery schools.
I remember.
We are in the business of supporting their eventual entry into civic life and also economic life of the community. So, absolutely, we need to be preparing. Do we need to train them on this exact machine? No, not necessarily, because that machine will most likely not exist in 20 years. But equipping students with the critical thinking skills, the soft skills, and in some cases the hard skills will help prepare them for a economy that's going to be broad and diverse and hopefully very, very rewarding.
Yeah, the ability to learn.
Yeah.
And the desire to.
Yeah.
And I think half the time it's not screwing things up rather than putting something out in front. You know, it is interesting what people will respond to and what they don't. What I'm intrigued by in the next little bit is what's going to happen to the kids coming out of Humboldt.
Cal Poly Humboldt.
Are the jobs going to be here so they can stick? Or are they going to take those skill sets and that knowledge and go out into the world somewhere else? Because if they stuck, now we're not talking, we're talking about people from out of the area coming here, but they've been here for a while. So they're almost one of us.
Yeah. Well, that happened to me. You know,
spoken like a native, huh?
I went to Humboldt State, and I tried to move away, but I loved this place so much. We kept moving back until we stayed and raised our family here.
Yeah.
And the best way to encourage people to stay is to make sure that there are the economy, the jobs available here, so that investment in education at the post-secondary level is actually something that they can realize.
Thanks for coming by, bud. It was fun.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
See everybody tomorrow.